You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. We've got heaps and heaps going on this week in cricket as usual. We've got to cover the New Zealand-Pakistan series that never was, the T20 Blast Final, Virat Kohli stepping down as T20 captain of India and the RCB, and a whole heap more. All coming up on the Top Order Podcast. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. Breaking into the podcast feed, it's me and Baldy. We recorded our podcast this week in cricket on Monday night, New Zealand time, the 20th of September. It's now Tuesday, the 21st of September. And some breaking news overnight that England have withdrawn from their October tours to Pakistan, both women's and men's tours affected. But very interestingly, not talking about threats of terrorism or any specifics around that, more citing the player welfare component. As that was breaking, also news story broken on Crick Info by George De Bell just a couple of hours ago that the third ODI of the series between England and New Zealand women in Leicester was under threat. A bomb being threatened to have been placed within the team hotel. It's later been deemed that threat not credible, and the game will go ahead. But Baldy, yeah, worrying really all round from a cricketing perspective that, you know, this kind of stuff's happening in our beautiful game.
Yeah, absolutely concerning on both fronts. Let's talk about the England-Pakistan series first. Both the men's and women's tours for England's players to Pakistan have now been cancelled for their October trip, the ECB releasing a statement Monday afternoon confirming that its board had, and I quote, reluctantly decided to withdraw both teams from the October trip. And they cited, again, I'm quoting from Crick Info's article here, increasing concerns about travelling to the region and further pressure to a playing group who have already coped with a long period of operating in restricted COVID environments. So nothing in the ECB statement around security or concerns around security, but this is citing sort of general concerns about travel to that area of the world and also kind of that pressure on the playing group to deal with kind of multiple COVID environments. In all of this, we probably shouldn't forget that it was Pakistan that first toured England to bring cricket back into our living rooms and back onto our television screens in last year's series in England. So unfortunately, at this point, England not able to reciprocate that arrangement just yet. I'm sure it will come at some point. But understandably now, Pakistan officials are pretty irate that even despite not mentioning the security piece, England have chosen to not tour Pakistan this time around and have cited both the sort of general travel concern, which probably has a security element to it, and also the sort of COVID bubble fatigue piece, which we've seen coming for some time.
Yeah, for me, obviously just really disappointing for the game first and foremost. I think a couple of really pertinent points though. This tour to Pakistan by the England men's and women's teams was tacked onto the schedule. And look, I guess I don't think anyone will say this out loud, but it was probably done as a little bit of a deal with Pakistan coming to the UK, as you mentioned last summer, and sort of operating in those Southampton Rose Bowl and Old Trafford bubble, secure bubble environments to get test and ODI cricket on. And then obviously this summer as well. But I think they have sort of maintained that ongoing commitment to the tour that was scheduled there for 2022 and them really wanting to fulfill that. I guess we don't know all of the ramifications here, but it seems to me that the decision's been made on the basis that with not only COVID, but also these potential threats, the preparation for the men's ICC T20 World Cup could have been massively affected if there'd have been any issues on this tour. And I guess they sort of weighed up the benefit of practicing in those conditions with their side playing some meaningful cricket versus preparation in the nets and perhaps a little bit of a longer build up necessary now for them to get used to those conditions in the UAE for the World Cup being more beneficial than the uncertainty of touring Pakistan so close to that tournament. And the interesting thing for me though is the way that the boards have sort of communicated this. I think both the New Zealand and English cricket boards have been relatively diplomatic. Wasim Khan, we mentioned on the podcast last night, really, really diplomatic around just really wanting a bit more understanding of all of the pieces of the puzzle that went into that decision-making process for New Zealand to cancel their tour. But then it doesn't help when the newly appointed chairman of the Pakistan Cricket Board, Ramiz Raja, is taken to Twitter with 140 characters of what I can only sort of look at. It looks like the kind of tweet that Donald Trump would have written. It's just real heart on the sleeve, 140 characters. And look, I don't think really becoming of someone in that position. But I'm probably a little bit emotional about it because it's attacking my cricket board.
Well, I think the emotions are running high in Pakistan cricket because the ramifications, both financially and for their ability to host cricket successfully, international cricket, is now really up in the air. Unfortunately, the financial implications for Pakistan are massive because these are two tours that may now impact West Indies going to Pakistan and potentially Australia going to Pakistan as well. So we can certainly understand the emotional state that their executive are in. Ramiz Raja seems like a guy who's wearing his heart on his sleeve. He said he's put out some pretty forthright views. He's gone on a bit of an attack again this morning around his perception that Australia, New Zealand, England have formed a bloc, they are acting in concert and against the interests of Pakistan cricket. We have no evidence to suggest that's the case, of course, but that's his perspective on it. I'm just reading this Crick Info article here that's sort of broken in the last 15 or 20 minutes or so. There's talk of potentially seeking compensation for losses relating to the abandonment of the tour. So there's lots and lots to play out over the next few days. And of course, the World Cup coming up. Ramiz Raja has said that his players will do the talking on the field and he's called on them to beat, England, Australia, etc., New Zealand in that tournament to show that Pakistan are successful on the field. I don't think it's got anything to do with on the field. It's the way in which the environment that these players are playing in that causes the concern. So, look, Pakistan, in terms of their build-up, their preparation's been, completely cancelled. They had all these matches to warm up for the T20 World Cup with New Zealand, with England. They're now cancelled. So they'll won't have any, I don't think, preparation for the World Cup at all. So it's really, really unfortunate for Pakistan. And hopefully we can get some administrators and some executives talking with cool heads and nutting this situation out. Because I'm sure as England and India have been able to reach a compromise around the cancelled last test at Old Trafford a couple of weeks ago, and that feels like almost a lifetime ago when that happened, that New Zealand and Pakistan boards can sit down and talk sense and come up with a compromise, and the same with the England and Pakistan boards too, because I'm sure the players would love to tour Pakistan and play cricket in Pakistan internationally. It's just a matter of how can we make it safe to do so.
Yeah, well, I guess we don't really want to delve into that too much on a quick 10-minute insert into the podcast just to get the breaking news, but I'm sure this is one that will run and run. And I think we mentioned on our podcast recording last night, the ICC really have got a massive role to play now, I think. And this is, you know, it's been missing, hasn't it? That sort of world governance and setting some of these precedents. So we are going to see undoubtedly key players pull out of tours for mental health and workload reasons over the course of the next year or so. COVID is not going away from that perspective. You know, the Ashes looks like it's going to be seriously affected as well. So I think the ICC have got to kind of step in and actually say, hey, this is what we're going to deem to be cancellation, postponement, how we're going to schedule these things into future tours. And I think ultimately they're going to have to look at that future tours program and look at stripping out some of the cricket, and particularly if we want to maintain franchise cricket bubbles and the amount of world events that we're going to have over the course of any given cycle, because something isn't tenable in terms of asking, I guess, the players to operate in this ambiguity. You only look at the rest of society now having to cope with lockdowns and working from home and schooling your kids from home and all these kind of factors. You know, how can you play really, really top level international sport when you're worried about your health, your safety, your well-being, and your family as well? So I really feel for the players. I feel for the boards that are obviously losing revenue from this. But this is the time for the ICC to step in and mediate this and work with all the boards, all the broadcasters, the players' unions, and really come to put together a bit of a framework as to how they're going to deal with this as this undoubtedly continues.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to harp on about it, but we may be seeing here the catalyst for change in terms of scheduling, because now, as we talked about, you know, 12 months ago, teams are starting to vote not only with their rescheduling of tours, but listening to players and making sure that their voices are heard in terms of the cricket that's being scheduled. So I would expect that there will be more rescheduling of cricket going forward, and I expect the ICC to sit up and take notice and actually think about their future tours program, think about that international cricket calendar that they put forth about 6 months ago that had so many international tournaments in it that may actually need a rethink to just simmer down a little bit the amount of international cricket that we've been playing. We've got some good news, though, in terms of England and New Zealand women's team are going to continue their tour, it looks like, at this stage. The third ODI was in question, again, with a security scare. But this time, we think we've got some good news, Adam.
Yeah, so I think, with regard to this, I think the question that's going to come for me, look, it's great news that the series is going to continue, but I think that the Pakistan Cricket Board will be asking the question, why was this threat deemed not credible? And the one in Pakistan was deemed to be a credible threat, particularly if the information still isn't shared. But look, I guess, you know, we don't know all the rules around sort of the sharing of this kind of intelligence and information. For me, I can't believe that either the New Zealand cricket boards or the English cricket boards would be hiding or fabricating or doing anything untoward with the information that have been given, other than acting on it with good faith. And ultimately, you know, you're not going to pay security consultants for their advice and then ignore it. That wouldn't be particularly good business sense, particularly if the ramifications of that are an incident that, you know, that causes wider and more serious issues. So look, I think great news that you know, that series continues. I hope the story is that the series is continuing and that we're getting to see some cricket rather than the whys and wherefores of why this has continued and why the tour in Pakistan has been cancelled. But let's just hope it goes without a hitch at Grace Road and for the rest of the series as well, with games, I think, Friday and Sunday.
Yeah, let's hope that cricket can continue and this does prove to be a non-credible threat. And of course, there will be questions asked by the Pakistan board as to why a decision was made in favour of cricket in one circumstance and not in another. I think that the fact that there's not going to be no further comment, I think, from the ECB on the matter is going to leave some things a little bit up in the air. But ultimately, the security assessment was credible, one was not. And people are going to read into that with their own view, from their own points of view and from their own internal biases. and we've probably got some of it of our own, but the outcome is that cricket will continue, and that's a good thing. Hopefully cricket can continue in Pakistan in the near future, and that will also be a good thing. So just to wrap up on this, it is good news for cricket generally. People are going to read into it, but hopefully we can see past the individual incidents and look at an avenue for cricket to move forward.
Awesome. Well, Baldy, let's get the listeners back to the podcast we recorded on Monday night. Just a quick reminder, this is a very, very quick insert at the top of the Top Order podcast this week in cricket for the week commencing the 20th of September. But after the swish, we'll get you back to normal programming. Thanks for listening.
Well, look, let's start, guys. Sad news coming out of Pakistan, obviously, who were hoping to see another road to return for international cricket in Pakistan after a long period of exile. New Zealand, obviously, over there preparing for white ball tours. But leading into the first game of that tour, that the guys had been there for several days training at the ground. But then, yeah, I guess the Twitter rumour mill started at, I don't know, about 8 o'clock New Zealand time, probably in the evening, Lippy. And that picked up a little bit of, a little bit of sort of pace. We were hearing about potential COVID breaches. And then there were sort of, you know, rumours of other nefarious things going on in Pakistan. But ultimately, it's led to the Black Caps now having landed in Dubai, I think today, on a charter flight out of Pakistan. And calling the whole series off. We're just a couple of hours before the scheduled start of that first ODI. So look, first and foremost, you've got a feel for Pakistan cricket and also for the Black Caps, who've probably gone through a little bit of turmoil and stress in that period. But how are we unpicking this, you know, two or three days in the aftermath? And Lippy, I'll come to you first.
Oh, look, I mean, you hit the nail on the head before for me when you were talking and you just mentioned the word sadness. And that's my overall feeling about this whole thing. You know, I feel gutted that it's been 18 years since we've toured Pakistan. There's a lot of new players on that squad and it's ended like that, you know. And I know that I'm speaking from a New Zealand perspective. So, you know, I just can't really understand and sort of I can only imagine how upset the Pakistan fans must be. I remember when we spoke to Wasim on the show, Wasim Khan, and he spoke just so passionately about wanting to bring cricket back to the country. And, you know, it sort of dawned on me today that there'll be guys in Pakistan that play for their country and potentially go their whole international career or have gone their whole international career, never really playing any games in front of home fans. And look, I completely understand that it's got to be massively upsetting the way that this has all played out. But I guess I also feel like what was lost, at least in that immediate aftermath of all of this, is that you can actually appreciate how upsetting it is on the Pakistan side and still feel like New Zealand has done the right thing, you know, because these aren't two competing sides. There's no winners in this situation. There's no, like, nobody wanted this to play out like it was. There's New Zealand guys over there wanting to make their ODI debuts. I think of someone like Glenn Pocknell, who's over there getting a chance to coach his country, and that's just been taken away from him. You've got guys like Ish Sodhi, Martin Guptill, Daryl Mitchell. They've arrived like days earlier to rejoin the squad, get some prep for the T20 World Cup. I mean, there's no sort of calculated plan to bring down Pakistan cricket. You know, the Black Caps received a government warning about, you know, they keep using these words, targeted, credible threat, and they've acted in a cautious manner to keep the players and support staff safe. And I just think, you know, you actually just... there doesn't have to be a winner and a loser out of this situation. Everyone's lost out of this situation. And I feel like the overwhelming, when you go on social media and you just see so much negativity, I just had to step away from it. I actually usually, like you mentioned, Binksy, as you go on before the games to kind of get a sense of how everyone's feeling about the games. And it just became way too negative and overwhelming. And I just had to step away. And I've barely been on since.
Yeah, Lippy, couldn't agree with you more there. I guess the difficult thing is here, it is obviously a very emotional situation. And I think what you've probably got to do to a certain extent is the players won't have had a massive amount of say in this. They'll have got the advice. They'll pay for that advice from what transpires. And look, I guess if we followed all of this in a little bit more detail prior to the events, we'd know that there was a, you know, private firm of security consultants headed up actually by a guy who used to be, I don't know his exact title, but the ECB's head of security, an Australian guy called Reg Dickerson, who has got that, you know, got that sort of information, and also providing information to the England team as well for their upcoming tour. I guess we can't really go into the politics of it. You know, in the press, you're seeing reports today that the English or British government don't have the same threat alert levels as the New Zealand Foreign Office. So does that impact whether or not a different country sort of tours? You mentioned Wasim in your little sort of prologue there, Lippy. And I think one of the key things is just the passion that came out and probably the uncertainty around the protocols. For me, the question is, where did the ICC get involved in this? You know, they can't necessarily hold the purse strings for all the kind of security arrangements for what is essentially a bilateral series. But ultimately, they need to set some protocols, I think, as to how this, you know, how this should happen, what needs to be, you know, given as advice to the teams, and when is it appropriate to call things off, I guess, to a certain extent. Because you've got to this, you know, you've got to the stage where you've got Imran Khan, not in his cricketing capacity, in his capacity as Prime Minister of Pakistan, getting on the phone to Jacinda Ardern. And again, if you read the press, this is a ministerial level, this is a prime ministerial level decision, because it was her that, you know, that's advised to get the team home safely. So as you said, just really, really feel for the players and for the game. But ultimately we bash the ICC a little bit, but you know, where is their role in this in terms of governing that kind of decision, which is going to happen more and more, unfortunately, I think, as we kind of get into this COVID situation and probably a bit of unrest in that part of the world. Again, not going into the politics, but with what's going on in Afghanistan, it's going to be very difficult to play cricket in neighbouring and close by countries, you would have thought, as it was throughout large parts of the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah, I'm happy you mentioned governance there, actually, because we talked about it last week when we talked about Afghanistan. Should the New Zealand team even have been in Pakistan at this time? The argument that people are using is that, you know, other people have toured there recently. That's completely out the window for me. In the last 30 days, the situation has completely changed. The other side of this coin, and actually I understand the Pakistan sentiment or point of view on this, is that the decision was kind of just made by the New Zealand government, by New Zealand cricket. Well, I don't think New Zealand cricket actually had much choice, but there was no real discussion when it came to pulling out. It was just like, here's a text, we're off, thanks for looking after us for a week, and we'll see you later. So from that perspective, I think that there's probably some protocols that might have been skipped or maybe not extended to the Pakistani government or the cricket board. So I can understand that sort of disappointment that they're feeling. At the end of the day, I don't think that New Zealand probably should have been there. I think that there was some space to review that and understand what the threat was like from the last 20 days, 28 days worth of fallout in neighbouring countries. The other point that I wanted to mention was just when you were talking, Stu, about Twitter and all the emotion on Twitter, I can understand that from the fans, those keyboard warriors. Where I find a bit of concern around that is when people like Ramiz Raja come out and start talking quite emotionally, when the players start talking quite emotionally. And Ramiz Raja in particular is becoming a bit of a concern for me, and his style of leadership being quite strong. Someone like Wasim Khan, we know he's been doing a really, really good job. New centralized contracting, the PSL success over the last couple of years, Pakistan continuing to tour the world or being in a position to tour the world, and international cricket back in Pakistan. Here we have in the last 2 weeks, coaching staff being chucked out, team selections coming out of left field, and of course the tweeting in the heat of the moment. So these are things that I just want to make sure, these are things that I'm just concerned about that are going to destabilize the cricket board and how they have been operating over the last, 2 years, 3 years under Wasim Khan's leadership. And I think he did the right thing. He didn't come out straight away. He issued a statement today with the right lines in terms of he wasn't happy about this and that, but he did it in a controlled manner. So, and I think it came across really well.
Yeah, to your point on governance, dead right. That you know, that statement, it had plenty of passion in from Wassim Khan today, but none of that sort of accusatory tone or emotional tone and rhetoric. And yeah, look, couldn't agree more. Pakistan's got itself in a really good state. And, you know, we've been talking about the quality of the cricket that they've been able to play over the past 4 or 5 years. And look, I wonder how long someone like Wassim Khan lasts as CEO in that kind of really volatile, you know, environment where, you know, the chairman's kind of throwing his weight around and probably making it really difficult to do that job as CEO, because he's got to build those bridges now with the New Zealand Cricket Board, with the ICC, with the security community. So yeah, could be pretty difficult. Difficult times. Let's move on to happier things. So there is some cricket going on around the world. Lippy, I'll come to you. White Ferns, a couple of games in to their ODI series against the England women. Yeah, what's caught your eye so far in the series there?
Well, it's almost a repeat of last week. And in terms of, you know, I think last week we were talking about the final T20 game and New Zealand sort of missed opportunity there. They got very close and just sort of let it slip away in the final spots. And it's been a similar case here, particularly in the second ODI. New Zealand right on top. I was watching it, you know, hanging in there as long as I sort of could last night, hanging in and watching their bowling effort, and they were doing a tremendous job. And then, you know, not long after I went to bed, England put on a 50-run last wicket stand and got themselves up still to only about just under 200. And New Zealand kind of working their way along there, and then just for ending up, you know, bit of rain around, Duckworth Lewis got involved, and but still a very, very winnable game, and just fell short by 13 runs. And I guess the thing is that last summer it felt like the New Zealand home summer, it felt like the White Ferns were not getting themselves in those winning positions. It's at least now bringing me hope and a bit of positive news that they're getting themselves in these positions to win against a good English side. And I just, you know, I continue to hope that this is going to... There are a lot more positives to take away from this tour than what I saw when England and Australia came last summer.
So I guess I'll come to you, Baldy, on this question. So I believe that's... Well, I think we've won two of our last 20 one-dayers, which is becoming a bit of a real funk for the women's cricket team there. What do you think they need to do to start getting back into that winning habit?
I think having all your players available is a key, is an absolute must for New Zealand. Next February, when we come to the ODI World Cup, if New Zealand don't have all of their best players available playing at the same time, I think that's going to be a bit of a struggle for New Zealand to compete with Australia, India and England on that big stage. Stuart, you talked about New Zealand slowly building towards this World Cup by getting themselves into the contest, I should say, and getting themselves in situations where they're competing to win matches. That's fantastic for New Zealand in terms of their growth. At what point do we think that New Zealand needs to translate some of that potential and competitiveness against some of these big sides into results?
Well, I mean, it's got to happen soon. You mentioned the ODI World Cup. That's not far away now. In March, I think we're looking at that start of March where it's all booked in. And you know, I think there's a chance that it could be the last ODI World Cup for a few of our top players. And you know, I'm probably don't know enough about the depth of the young players in New Zealand that can come up and fill those spots. We've obviously seen a few around the Auckland circuit as we've been able to fortunately watch a bit of while we've been commentating. But, you know, it's got to happen soon because if we go into this World Cup, this home World Cup, you know, I remember, things are going to be very different potentially with COVID around now. But you think about the buzz that was here for the men's World Cup and the way that those crowds packed in to see the games. That's what we want in this Women's World Cup. And if New Zealand gets bundled out in the very early on in the tournament, and maybe we don't even make the semi-finals, it's going to make the kind of the climax of that tournament probably fall pretty flat.
three ODIs to go in their tour, Wednesday, 22nd of September, Friday, the 24th, and then Sunday. So, you know, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday games to finish out this tour of England for New Zealand. For you guys, for you, Stuart, first, and then for Raj, what's the pass mark for New Zealand here in terms of their results? And I am starting to get a bit results focused because, for me, New Zealand has shown enough potential now that with their top players playing, you know, regular cricket for them, you throw Amelia Kerr into that mix for New Zealand as well and a couple of others that have missed the tour, you throw them in and New Zealand are starting to be in a position now when they should be talking about results, in my view, not just potential. They've shown that in my mind. What do you think the pass mark here for New Zealand is in terms of these last three matches, in terms of wins?
Well, I think if you're results focused, then you're wanting all three and you're going to be hoping for a series win. But I mean, I'd say, I don't know. I mean, you're probably a better person to judge in terms of the results. I'm not that worried about the results at this stage. I still do want to see the performances. But, you know, you come away from this tour and say they only win one of these ODIs, win one T20, and it's sort of a 6-2, 7-1 kind of scoreline, and it does, on paper, look very disappointing. So, yeah, they'd want to be winning a couple to at least kind of show some credibility, I suppose, on the scorecard, even though some of the performances have been quite credible.
Rajan, for you, what do you think you would be looking for if you were in charge of this New Zealand women's team over these last three matches in their tour?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's hard to say that we want to see them compete, because they are competing. They're just falling short. I think if you are in charge of this team or part of this team, you want to start building some momentum. That big mo that we've been talking about during the IPL, we want to see them start to win some games. So with these last three games, I'd like to see them win two of them. But, you know, that may not happen, but I do want to see some results in terms of getting the W. That you just got to get back on that horse. It's the easiest way to get out of that funk.
Awesome. Well, as you say, next game Wednesday, Baldy, followed in rapid succession by Friday and Sunday. So by the time we record on that next podcast, we'll know whether that pass mark has been achieved. Let's move on to a notable intention to retire, Virat Kohli, saying he's going to step down as T20 skipper after the World Cup. And also, I think I saw he's going to step down from captaining the RCB as well. I know when that news broke on the Slack, I think it was Raj who just said, well, that's a pretty straight swap. And Rohit Sharma just comes in and proves his white ball captaincy credentials across those two formats. But anything else we want to add to King Kohli stepping down?
Oh, that was actually Baldy who posted that, but I can see how you got us mixed up. Very similar. Look, I think that there's been whispers around for a long time around Virat Kohli's leadership. And look, Stu, I think, mentioned it a number of times that he's just been in a massive batting slump for a while now. He hasn't scored big runs, but he doesn't have to be the captain to make an impact. I feel like he probably has a little bit of dissonance there, same as David Warner did with the Ashes in England a couple of years back. We're trying to find that line. I don't want Virat Kohli to worry about that line. I just want him to worry about being the best batsman that he is, or that he can be, and score some runs. I guess he's looking for a change, and this is how he's going to affect it.
Yeah, look, you mentioned that, Raj. I have sort of been highlighting the fact that Kohli hasn't got runs, but largely it's because I want to see him score runs. I think I also said that, you know, I actually kind of love watching him play. He plays with such passion and such kind of drive to win, and I can really relate to that. And, you know, I'm sure it probably was a pretty tough thing to do, to say, look, I will step down from the captaincy, but you hope that it's all for the right reasons and to get the right performances. And you know, I think you just mentioned it there, Binksy, that they've got a good replacement in Rohit Sharma, because he's got some record as a captain, certainly for Mumbai, and every time he's sort of stepped in, and he seems to have such a good rapport with all the players. So yeah, it's pretty exciting for India that they can just make such an easy change.
And do we see Virat continuing in white ball cricket as a player, do you think, or does he disappear out of that side without the C next to his name?
No, I think he continues, absolutely. I think he will put all of it, not all of his eggs in the Test cricket basket, but I think that's certainly his leadership aspiration format of choice. He will continue to play white ball cricket for India for some time yet. I think he's got a few records probably in his sights. I'm not sure if he's a stats guy or not, but I would imagine that there's a few records that are well within his grasp if he plays another 3 or 4 years of white ball cricket for India. I can't see him hanging up the gloves anytime soon, particularly in those short formats.
Well, let's move on from one relative veteran to the ultimate veteran. It was T20 Blast Finals Day in the UK over this weekend. So Edgbaston, the home of the T20 Blast Finals, the Holly Stand and the Fancy Dress in fine voice for a pretty much all Southern affair. So yeah, Somerset, Sussex, Kent and Hampshire being the sides involved. Darren Stevens impressing again at the ripe old age, I think, of 45 and change now. He was actually left out for the T20 Blast quarterfinal and was told apparently by Sam Billings, who didn't have a stellar finals day with the bat, but effected a pretty handy stumping, letting him know he was going to be left out of the quarterfinal lineup just 5 minutes before the toss. And actually came out in the press before finals day saying, get me in the side and I will, I'll win you the tournament. Certainly performed in the semi-final with 40 odd, a couple of important wickets as well. And the other thing I just wanted to point out, and this is more of an esoteric cricketing question rather than necessarily about T20 Blast, but we saw another one of these amazing catches on the boundary. Man of the match in the final, Jordan Cox, who deposited quite a few balls into that Holly Stand, taking an absolute or taking part in a spectacular catch on the boundary where he batted the ball back in to Milnes to complete a fantastic catch. When is the guy that goes, you know, into the advertising hoardings head first, lands, you know, head upturned in a pint of warm beer and has effected an amazing catch, going to get on the score sheet for some of this instead of the fellow who just stands there and takes a very simple pass back? What are our thoughts on finals day and a potential rule change as well, guys?
Look, I think if anyone listening to this podcast now and hasn't seen that catch, that's the first thing they should do. We obviously want you to listen straight through, but we'll forgive you in this instance if you just press pause for a second and Google that Jordan Cox assist, I guess, which maybe that's the route we have to go down, that catch assists. And Baldy will be all over that just as a stats man. You can jump in a second there, but once Baldy's had a crack, I just want to know, Binksy, when Darren Stevens is going to play for England. It's honestly, the guy has put in, he's put up the numbers. He's got to get a crack.
I'm all for both assists being part of cricket statistic law. I'm all for more advanced statistics in cricket. So catch assists would be a big one. Doesn't happen often. Mark Taylor springs to mind off his boot, and there's a few in the outfield of late. But yeah, look, Darren Stevens, he's just got to go to Australia, and I think he'll destroy Australia. Nibbling it around at about sort of 60 mile an hour would be a devastating option in the Ashes tour. So get him on the plane, have him bat somewhere in the top seven, maybe six or seven, and then bowling at the Australians at about 60 miles an hour. No, I jest, but his career has been fantastic, and he people will look back on Darren Stevens' career and ask that question legitimately: why didn't he ever play for England? Because unfortunately, you know, Test cricket is just 10% faster than county cricket, unfortunately, and a guy that succeeds at county level doesn't necessarily have the right kind of attributes that step up. But a fantastic career for Darren Stevens, and probably just that he goes out on a winning note if he is going to retire at the end of this season, and maybe he continues into next season in 5 or 6 years' time. And we're talking about this in episode 300 of the Top Order podcast, Darren Stevens winning the Vitality Blast at age 50.
Yeah, well, look, he's certainly got some vitality, and I think that he's come out pretty much after, because I'm sure, you know, everyone was going to ask that as the first question in the press conference. You know, is that it for you? Are you going to bow out? And he's pretty much said, nah, I've got another year's contract. I love the game. I'm going to carry on playing. And yeah, look, that's fantastic, because I bet he gets up in the morning and it's, you know, it's a struggle to get out of bed and lace up the boots at times. But to keep going round and round on what is a hell of a treadmill, county cricket. You know, the amount of cricket the guys play, the different, you know, the switches between the different formats, lots and lots of four-day cricket and lots of overs in the legs. But I think I'm right in saying he's got 300s this year in the county championship, a number of wickets, useful wickets with his, yeah, he's slightly above 60 mile an hour. He's, you know, 62, 63. So it'd certainly cause you and I a few problems, Baldy, on a green one. But yeah, look, testament to him and a fantastic, yeah, a fantastic end to the season. But looks like he's going to go round again next year. And who knows if a few of these guys, Wokes and Curran and Stokes, pull out of the Ashes tours because they don't want to be in the bubbles, then there's worse all-rounders to sit in a business class seat and go and get their arses handed to them in Australia this winter.
That would be a brilliant way to end the podcast, this short little week in cricket. But I did just want to a word of warning, I suppose, to New Zealand fans and cricket fans here in New Zealand, in that basically just keep an eye on the schedule for the international stuff, because it's just looking a bit dicey here in New Zealand. We originally thought that we'd have Bangladesh in kind of December, January, South Africa, but then to follow, and the Netherlands somewhere in there. We had India ODIs. We had an Aussie white ball tour. It's all very, very much up in the air at the moment. India has, in the three ODIs against India, is pretty much, it looks like they won't happen, and there's almost definite reporting on that. And then we've got the Bangladesh, South Africa, and the Netherlands seem to be booked in, because you can go on and see the sports teams' MIQ reports, and those tours are being booked in. But and it sort of looks like Bangladesh will be here in January, so we won't have a Boxing Day test. I think the New Zealand squad that goes to India, they come back around mid-December. And so by the time they get out of MIQ, go home, see their family, all that kind of stuff, yeah, it's going to be into January before we see any international cricket in New Zealand this summer. South Africa to follow in February, March perhaps, and then the Netherlands after that for some ODIs for the ODI Super League. But yeah, very, very much up in the air. And that Aussie white ball tour in particular, I think, is in serious danger if there's no bubble, because I don't think that they've planned, because there's so much uncertainty, I don't think they've then planned the MIQ slots back for the New Zealanders that would go over there. So yeah, I feel like that one might not happen. And you know, as we sit here, Auckland is potentially is now definitely going down to level 3 in a day or two's time. You know, that still means no domestic cricket here in New Zealand until at least Auckland can move down, or at least there's no domestic cricket for Auckland. So a lot of disruption. And I think just, yeah, certainly hold fire if you were planning to go anywhere for a Boxing Day test or anything like that.
Well, thanks for that, Lippy. We'll end on that rather somber note, a cricketing podcast with no cricket to talk about over our summer period. But I'm sure we'll find an excuse, whether we're in lockdown or not. I think if we are in lockdown, I'll definitely have run out of patience with my children and alcohol in my cupboard as well, if we're still there at Christmas this time. But that probably just wraps up this week in cricket. It is a short one from us, but you will see a Hall of Fame episode hitting your feed very, very shortly. We'll be back with This Week in Cricket next week, where we will wrap up the White Ferns tour to the UK. And no doubt, a little bit of IPL and a little bit of aftermath from this Pakistan-New Zealand cancellation, as well as probably finding out the result of that test match at Old Trafford as well. I'm sure the ICC will delight us with their decision in quick fashion. But if not, we'll still be back to talk all things cricket next week. It's good night and God bless from us here in Auckland. We'll see you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.